Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 8, Chapter 6, The Demigods and Demons Declare a Truce, Text Number 13. Tam Tvam Vayam Nata Samuj Jihanam Sarojana Bhachit Chirep Sitartam Trishvagata Nirvitam Adya Sarve Gaja Dvavarata Iva Gangam Ambaha. Tvam, O Lord. Tvam, Your Lordship. Vayam, all of us. Nata, O Master. Samujihanam, now appearing before us with all glories. Sarojanava, O Lord, whose navel resembles a lotus flower. Or from whose navel grows a lotus flower. Atichiram, for an extremely long time. Ipsita, desiring. Artam, for the ultimate goal of life. Drishva, seeing. Gata, in our vision. Nirvitam, transcendental happiness. Adya, today, Sarve, all of us, Gaja, elephants, Dava Arata, being afflicted in a forest fire, Eva, like, Gangam, Ambaha, with water from the Ganges. Translation of purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Elephants afflicted by a forest fire became very happy when they get water from the Ganges. Similarly, O my Lord, from whose navel grows a lotus flower, since you have now appeared before us, we have become transcendently happy. By seeing your Lordship, whom we have desired to see for a very long time, we have achieved our ultimate goal in life. Purport. The devotees of the Lord are always very eager to see the Supreme Lord face to face, but they do not demand that the Lord come before them. For a pure devotee considers such a demand to be contrary to devotional service. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu teaches this lesson in his Sikshastika, Adarshanam Marmahatam Kurotiva. The devotee is always eager to see the Lord face to face. But if he is brokenhearted because he cannot see the Lord, even life after life, he will never command the Lord to appear. This is a sign of pure devotion. Therefore, in this verse, we find the word Ati Chira Ipsita Artam, meaning that the devotee aspires for a long, long time to see the Lord. If the Lord, by his own pleasure, appears before the devotee feels extremely happy. As Dhruva Maharaj felt when he personally saw the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When Dhruva Maharaj saw the Lord, he had no desire to ask the Lord for any benediction. Indeed, simply by seeing the Lord, Dhruva Maharaj felt so satisfied that he did not want to ask the Lord for any benediction. Swamin kritartosmi varam nat yache. Pure devotee, whether able or unable to see the Lord, always engages in the Lord's devotional service, always hoping that at some time the Lord may be pleased to appear before him so that he can see the Lord face to face. So the text again. Elephants afflicted by a forest fire become very happy when they get water from the Ganges. Similarly, O my Lord, from whose navel grows the lotus flower, since you have now appeared before us, we have become transcendently happy. By seeing your Lordship, whom we have desired to see for a very long time, we have achieved our ultimate goal in life. There are two types of feeling or being Krishna conscious. One is called sambandha, having direct association with Krishna. You don't have to find it, you have to move a little so I can see you. Otherwise, you have to peer from the pole, from the column. And the other is viparlamba, a feeling of separation. Right now, we have neither. Neither we have association with Krishna, nor do we feel any separation from him. We do have intimate association with the material world, though, and we feel separation from so many sense objects. So it is not that we don't want to have Krishna's association, but the devotees don't demand sambandha. As a matter of fact, according to our acharyas, remembering Krishna in separation is even more pleasurable than directly seeing him. Of course, remembering Krishna and seeing him are non-different. It's just that there's a feeling of separation. In other words, as Krishna is non-different from his name, he's also non-different from his form, his quality, his pastimes, his associates. And by remembering those, one is actually directly getting Krishna's association. But when you add feelings of separation, then it makes it sweeter. Of course, the devotees don't only want to feel separation. Without meeting Krishna, separation has no meaning ultimately. There has to be some meeting of Krishna. Otherwise, the separation will be considered to be inconclusive. In any case, when we're not either directly associating with Krishna or we don't feel any real separation, it's not that we're rolling on the ground right now feeling that I can't live without Krishna. We seem to be doing quite well without Krishna. Which is what our problem is. We think we're doing quite well. We're in a place, the worst place you can be in one sense, in the material world. You can't get any worse than that. Any place in the spiritual world, even as a blade of grass or as a tree, is unlimitedly better than being where we are. And our real disease is that we think we're doing quite well. And therefore, as it said, Janmaishwarya Shruta Shri Bir Edamanak Madakpuman Naivahata Vidatum Vai Twam Akinchana Gochara. This desire to improve our material existence is our greatest enemy. It is not that we don't want to live here, quote, comfortably. Comfortably means without anxiety. And the very striving to get comfort usually creates anxiety. If we get what we wanted, then we'll feel fear of losing it. And if we don't get what we wanted, we feel anger for not getting it. So that as soon as some desire arises in the mind for a better life in this material world, then all we do is put ourselves in anxiety. And even if we get exactly what we wanted, it's inevitable that we have to lose it. Everything here is temporary. Therefore, Krishna says, Yadricha lavashantushto dvanvati to vimatsaraha samak siddhaval siddhal chakrit vapinanabhajite. One who's satisfied with gains which comes from his own accord, who's never entangled and free from duality, And never envious. Is never entangled, although performing action. Who's equal both in happiness and distress, is never entangled, although performing activities. So, we actually have to come to the stage of neutrality in the material world. Not being overly joyful when we get something pleasant, nor lament when we get something unpleasant. Instead, try to focus the mind and intention on Krishna. In other words, if we actually become conscious of Krishna, we won't care what our material situation is, whether it's so-called pleasant or unpleasant, because we'll be in a different realm of experience. And if we're not conscious of Krishna, the only thing we have left is what our material experience is. And our material existence is very inauspicious. If it's not, especially, being utilized exactly to focus our mind upon Krishna. Now, we may have that on our list of things to do. Focus our minds upon Krishna. Maybe in this life or in the next. It's on our list. We just have a few other things we got to take care of before we do that. It's a little bit like the devotees used to say, if you simply go out and distribute books, or Prabhupada would say, then everything else will automatically come. And now we say, if you simply do everything else, then you'll be able to distribute books. Therefore, some places are making unlimited arrangements for distributing books, but they have no time to distribute books. They're making too many arrangements. When everyone surrenders to Krishna and spontaneously chants Hare Krishna, then at that time we'll easily be able to distribute these books. Similarly, if we take as our priority making everything nice for our existence in the future, exactly which old age home I'm going to live in and how it's going to be decorated, who my servants will be, what kind of wheelchair I'll be in, we're spending so much time making arrangements. And then when it's all ready, then at the time it's time to blast off into my next life, I'll pick up my japa beads, Hare Krishna, and chant with all sincerity, it's time, Krishna, I'm ready. Unfortunately, things don't work like that. As a matter of fact, that's why we're probably here now. That's what we were thinking in our last lifetime, too. And our next lifetime, again, you know, we'll think, yeah, if I just make all the nice arrangements at the time of death, I'll be able to remember Krishna. I don't have time to chant sincerely because I have too much anxiety making the arrangements, so I can chant sincerely at the time of death. So, one should understand that death can come at any time, and the best arrangement is to do some service to Krishna, sincere service, to help others become Krishna conscious, and myself also, and try to focus the mind upon Krishna now, and not wait into the distant future. When I'm old, I'll chant Hare Krishna. Or as I said before, one devotee lady was telling her mother, chant, chant, chant. She was about to leave her body. And her mother replied, right before she left her body, can't, can't, can't. Chant, chant, chant. Can't, can't, can't. Or as the other example is, one devotee lady was asking her mother to chant Hare Krishna when she was about to leave her body also. And her mother said, I cannot say so many words before she left her body. So it takes practice. If no one has no idea what the value of the Hare Krishna mantra is, why will one do that? One chant that at the time of death? Most people are attached to their mother at the time of death. They did a survey, or they did some investigation. What do pilots, what are their last words before the plane crashes? They have these black boxes in the airplanes, and there's a recording with the pilot, whatever he's saying. And so they took the black boxes and analyzed the last words of the pilot. And inevitably, the pilot would be calling out for, "Mommy!" Unfortunately, Mommy couldn't help them. So, unless we become convinced that Krishna is our protector, not sometime in the future he'll protect us, but unless we're observing his protection, that is that we can be happy and blissful in any circumstance if we're Krishna conscious. It's not that we're chanting Hare Krishna and Krishna will protect us, so I can walk across a busy highway with my eyes closed and somehow or another all the cars will miss me. That's how I test Krishna's protection. You can try it. You may be a little disappointed. Krishna will probably try to protect you by telling you not to do it. On the other hand, if you're convinced you want to try it, at least be blissful when you're walking across the street chanting Hare Krishna. Then you'll actually get some benefit, even if it may be you're taking off for Goloka Vrindavan maybe a little bit quicker than you thought. In any case, real protection is to have faith how Krishna is a protector, how Krishna is the controller, how Krishna is the enjoyer, how Krishna is our real friend, and therefore feel safe in Krishna consciousness, because that's the only safety. Therefore, vihaya kama yaksarvam pumam charati nisriha nirmamo nirahankara sa shanti madhigachiti. Actually, apuryamanam achala pratishtam samudram apa pravishanti yadvat tadvat kamiyam pravishanti sarve sa shanti matnoti nakama kami. A person who is not disturbed. What are we usually disturbed by? All the chatter, the conversation that's going on in our mind. We have a whole dialogue. There's a symposium going on in our mind usually. And we have so many representatives in our mind chatting to us all the time, giving us different perspectives on everything. To the fly that landed on our knee, to the state of the world economy, to what's for prasadam today. There's millions of people talking to us, having a conversation in our mind. And usually we pick out something very important, like, she loves me, she loves me not. She loves me not. Till finally a little voice goes, beep, beep, she doesn't love you. And then another conversation starts. So how to get free from all these different conversations that are going on? Krishna says, just like the river is flowing into, many rivers flow into an ocean, but the ocean always remains still and is never disturbed because it's full in itself. So if we fill up our day with Krishna consciousness, hearing about Krishna, regularly reading Prabhupada's books, coming to the program, doing service in Krishna consciousness, not that we're working for our prasadam, I put in my 3 hours and therefore I can eat. We're trying to work in Krishna consciousness. If we do that, well, then, and chant Hare Krishna during the day. There's no law against chanting Hare Krishna during the day. Gopal Guru. Gopal was a little boy, 5 years old, and he was in, I guess, the Navadvip. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went into the field to pass. And he came back, he was holding his tongue. So Gopal asked Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, "Why are you holding your tongue?" He said, "Well, I was in the forest, and I was doing something very nasty, but my tongue kept on chanting Hare Krishna, and I thought it was offensive." So Gopal said, "No, my lord, actually, you should chant Hare Krishna always, any situation." So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, "You're right, Gopal. You're my guru." So then from then on, Gopal was called Gopal Guru, because he even instructed Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to always chant Hare Krishna in any circumstance. So there's no law against chanting Hare Krishna during the day. And as a matter of fact, if we do it during the day, if we remember Krishna during the day, it's much more likely when we're chanting Hare Krishna in our prescribed 16 rounds or whatever it may be, then we're probably more likely to remember Krishna then. And remembering Krishna when we're chanting, it makes it a lot more pleasant than remembering other things. We say Hare Krishna, and my, you know, remembrances of my broken foot come into being. It's not very pleasant. We have to connect the holy name with a person holding a flute and a peacock feather in his hair, and is surrounded by associates like Srimati Radharani. Then it becomes pleasant when we're chanting Hare Krishna, and we're remembering everything except for Krishna. Then it's very unpleasant. If we clean our hearts during the day, then it's unlikely when we're chanting Hare Krishna and the cleansing process comes up, then all the dust will fly up. During the summer, or during the winter, people don't like to clean their house, so they sweep all the dust underneath the rug. And then when spring comes, they want to clean, and they lift up the rug, and all the dust comes up. So they think, "I'm wasting my time cleaning. The more I clean, the more dust there is." It's just that we've accumulated so much dust, when the cleaning time comes, then all the dust comes up. So is that bad? Maybe we should just sweep it back underneath the rug. Or bathe in the dust. No, if we cleanse the dust during the day, then when we chant Hare Krishna in our prescribed rounds, there won't be so much dust to clean. We'll be able to remember Krishna much more easily. And that's called Krishna consciousness. And if we remember Krishna, actually experience Krishna, then we'll start feeling some separation. We can't feel separation from something we're not aware of. And that separation is even better in some respects than even meeting Krishna. Of course, that separation grows to the point that at some time Krishna will personally come. That there's no need to demand Krishna to come. That once you simply increase one's activities of devotional service in Krishna consciousness, and therefore spontaneously the liking, the experience becomes sweeter and sweeter, and therefore one feels more and more separation from Krishna. And when the separation is so intense, when Krishna desires, then he reveals himself. But he hides from the devotee, or he doesn't reveal himself, just to increase the feelings of separation. First of all, is even more pleasurable than even meeting Krishna. And second is that unless one has intense feelings of separation, the intense desire to see Krishna won't be there, and that means that there's still some material contamination. Just like iron is naturally attracted to a magnet, but when the iron is rusty, the attraction doesn't exist. But when we clean the rust from the iron, then the attraction naturally comes. So Krishna, Nitya Siddha, Krishna Prema, Sadhu Kavinoy, Shravanadi, Shuddha Chite, Karya Udaya. Love for Krishna is natural. There's nothing more natural than love for Krishna. We're only attracted to things because they have some quality that Krishna has. So what to speak of the complete person and all his wonderful qualities. But because we're rusty, because we're covered by our material conceptions and attachments, therefore some cleansing has to be there. But when the cleansing is there, then naturally the attraction for the iron to the magnet is manifested without any separate endeavor. You don't have to teach the iron to become attracted to the magnet. It's natural. Just like as it says in the Nectar of Devotion or in another prayer, that let my attraction be caught towards Krishna, just like a young boy and a young girl's attraction are to each other. Generally speaking, you don't have to go to school to learn how to become attracted. A young boy doesn't have to go to school to learn how to become attracted to a young girl. Or a young girl doesn't have to go to school to learn how to become attracted to a young boy. Of course, you're supposed to go to school so you learn how to become not attracted. But that teaching is not there nowadays. But the example is there to show the spontaneity of material attachment. So similarly, when we're actually in our natural state, then we'll be naturally spontaneously attracted to Krishna, but we have to take to the process of cleansing. If you want to get cleansed, you have to enter into the shower. If you don't want to get cleansed, then don't go into the shower. And just pretend you're clean. So there's a process of cleansing, and that's mostly by chanting Hare Krishna without offense, which will be manifested in while we perfect our pure devotional service to Krishna. So I'll stop there. Thank you, Khala. Any questions? Yes.
Hare Krishna. Thank you. I have seen and heard about quite a few devotees who were praying with the prayer of Queen Kunti, Vipada Santutasha Shwat. Oh Krishna, send me anything and everything, any test and difficulty, but let me move on the way to you, progress, advance on the path towards you. And then something so difficult happened to them that they got second thoughts. Should they pray with this prayer? Because the test that would come would be too severe for them.
Yes.
So when can one pray with such prayer? Should one pray with this prayer that let the difficulties
come?
Well,
Queen Kunti didn't have to pray for when Vishan Mahagne Purushara Darshanat. She didn't pray that they poisoned Bhima. She didn't pray that they were put into a house of black and set on fire. She didn't pray that a Purushara Darshana, that a Rakshasa would come and try and eat them. She didn't pray for Draupadi being disturbed. She didn't pray that they'd be in a battle and that Ashwatthama and others would throw brahmastras at them. She didn't pray for them. But since they happened, and they concentrated her mind upon Krishna, in spite of the intensity of those problems, therefore she could pray like that. But if we step on a nail, then immediately we're screaming, you know, for salvation. So we have to go through the little tests before we can start praying for big tests. We should know our capacity, or else we're just imitating Queen Kunti.
Thank you. I have a connected question. I have one friend, a very nice devotee, but he said that Krishna, any difficulties that arise in my life make me forget you. So therefore, please do not send me the difficulties, because whenever difficulties come, I always forget you and become disturbed. So is that a legitimate request or prayer?
Good luck. The whole world is full of difficulty. One can't recognize that there's so many difficulties. And besides that, Krishna is not sending the difficulties usually. We're getting the reactions for our past activities. So what do we want? We want, you know, get cut, you know, we want to get heroin so we don't realize that we're in difficulty. What do we want? We're always in difficulty. We just want to cover over all the difficulties. So one should confront the difficulties, because ultimately The most difficult thing is death. So you want Krishna to have a nice, peaceful life, and then at the time of death, what are you going to do? Krishna, don't send me death. Wait. Death is inevitable. So we have to practice. And practice giving up. Vihaya kamayak sarvam pumam sharati nispriya. Give up desires of sense gratification. Give up material desires. Give up the desire for proprietorship and our false ego. Then we'll be able to confront our problems, our real problems, which is forgetting Krishna, thinking that we're going through these, that our real interest is in our material happiness in this lifetime, rather than concentrating the mind upon Krishna in any circumstance. So why do people, so we can't give up desires, and desires of sense gratification, and this idea of being the proprietor and becoming attached to our false ego. Anything that confronts these things, then we find a disturbance. Then we'll have to come back again and again in the material world till we finally give up this desire not to be confronted by our problems. Anything else? Yes.
A question by Avadhuta Rai Prabhu. Srila Prabhupada sometimes gives contradictory statements. We should not try to see God, but do things by which He can see us. But there are many examples that devotees very eagerly desire to see Krishna. If this is something only for the advanced devotees, then the question is why?
Because they actually have a desire to see Krishna. First of all, it says we should act in such a way as that Krishna will want to see us. But as far as, you know, actually, how many of us actually want to see Krishna? Because otherwise, if we saw Krishna, our whole material life would be spoiled. All our plans, all our position, all our hopes for the future, they'll all be spoiled. Our false ego will go away. What would we be left with? We'll be standing there as 1/10,000th the size of tip here in size. It's quite embarrassing. So as long as we want to be something that we're not, something much, apparently what we think is greater than what we are, then we don't really want to see Krishna because they'll spoil the dream that we think we're enjoying now. So we should be, as we actually get desirous, as we develop our devotional service and we get more and more experience in being conscious of Krishna and therefore becoming detached from our material dreams and conceptions, then the desire to see Krishna will increase. And therefore our association with Krishna will also increase. Around right now, how much desire do we really have? Or as one priest said, he said, "My dear Lord, please make me celibate. Give me complete celibacy. But not quite yet." So, yes. Well, do you want a microphone?
So does that mean that our desire to see Krishna at current state is kind of very superficial or very kind of artificial or not honest?
Well, I don't know about honest, but, you know, we have to see. Just like when the curtains open, how many rush in to see the deities and fall and roll on the ground when they see Panchatattva? When it's time to decide whether to go on the internet or read Prabhupada's books, how many of us are, you know, fall in the book and with tears in our eyes, so happy that we have this book, we can hear about Krishna. So we have to see. We may have some, we may pick up the book because we have some desire, and therefore we pat ourselves on the back, just thinking ourselves great devotees. But actually, we just have a little desire, and it has to be cultivated. Follow the process, and gradually Krishna will help us cultivate that desire. But we shouldn't say, "Well, I have a little desire; it's not enough for me because I'm a great person." Just throw that little desire at out because it's not worthy of me. So that's false ego. If we have a little desire, we should be appreciative of it and cultivate it. If you're in the forest and it's freezing, and you're able to light a little bit of get a few sticks of wood together and start lighting a fire, you don't look at the fire and say, "Well, this is pretty insignificant. I'm really cold. I just think I'll put it out. It's not enough." No, you try to cultivate until it gets blazing, and then you get warm.
Thank you.
Anything else?
Vishwana Chakravati Thakur's commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam 12.6.31 says, "In Vishnu there is no mind which has functions of accepting or rejecting. Can you explain this, please? How then does he discriminate?"
In what? In Vishnu?
Yes, it says, "In Vishnu there is no mind."
There's no mind. Well, I think you have the wrong translation. Vishnu has a mind.
Doesn't the reject
him
except like our
mind? Well, of course he doesn't have a mind like ours. He's not crazy. We're accepting, you know, this material world is just vibrations of Krishna's energy, of transformation of Brahman, appearing to us as something desirable or undesirable. But for Krishna, it's he knows what it really is. He's already blissful in his loving relationships with devotees. He's not interested in the false material energy. Therefore, he doesn't accept it or reject it. He just does his business here, helping the conditioned souls fulfill their desires and helping some souls go back to Godhead. That's his only interest. Not whether he wants to choose this brand of beer or the other brand. He's not interested in either brand. He doesn't drink beer. So his mind isn't agitated. Khala Granthara Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.